Rambam begins Hilchot Taniyot by speaking about the Taniyot that are a response to things happening in the present. For example, if Israel needs rain, or there's some kind of tzara on the horizon, we have a mitzvah to fast. Rambam explains in Halacha Bet, V'davar zeh midarkei ha-tshuvahu. It's part of the world of tshuva. Right? Bad things are happening, it's a sign. We have to stop and reflect on those bad things and get the message. The question is, how do we understand the fasts that are based on things that happened in the past? Why would we need to reflect on something that happened in the past? Rambam writes in Perikei Halacha Aleph, the continuation of this piece here, Yesh sham yamim shekol Yisrael mitanim behen mitnei hatzarot she'iru behen. He's talking now about things that happened in the past. Kedei la'orer halevavot, to awaken the hearts, v'leftoach darkei hatshuva. Rambam says, even these are meant to inspire you to tshuva. What's the explanation? The Rambam says, V'yihye zeh zikaron l'maaseinu hara'im u'maaseh avoteinu shehaya kemaaseinu ata ad shegaram lahem v'lanu otan atzarot. The Rambam explains that we need to mesh, to interface the present with the past. It should remind us of the things we do wrong, and the things our ancestors did wrong that were like the things we do wrong, that therefore caused them and us to suffer in similar ways. Meaning the assumption is that if we're still fasting about something that happened in the past and hasn't been repaired, it's because the problems that led to that occurrence still exist. And that's why the Yerushalmi writes, the basis for the Rambam, that any generation where the Beit Mikdash is not rebuilt in their days, it's as if it was destroyed in their days. Meaning, if the Beit Mikdash wasn't rebuilt, it means whatever problems caused its destruction still exist. So when we fast, we're not meant to say, oh, what a shame, many years ago people did something wrong. We're supposed to say, oh, what a shame, there are problems that still exist. We need to understand what were the initial problems that led to the result. How does that result continue to exist today? And how do those problems continue to exist, and hopefully we can solve those problems. Everyone understands the bigger picture? So when we come to a Tanis like a Sarbatevis, our question is, okay, well, you know, what's the deal? What are we supposed to be thinking about? What are we supposed to be correcting? The rest of the shiur is going to be about a Sarbatevis, but that introduction is very important, because a shiur about a Tanis without an introduction, right, it's just not good. It's not good. Okay. So let's begin by trying to understand what is a Sarbatevis. The first thing that's unique about Asara B'Teves is the fact, interesting trivia piece, when Yechezkel describes Asara B'Teves twice, he mentions it as Etzem Hayom Hazeh, that specific day. We find the same term used three times in reference to Yom Kippur. Asara B'Teves and Yom Kippur? The Beis Yosef, based on this similarity, quotes the Avudraham, one of the Spanish Rishonim, who says that Asara B'Teves is different than the other Taniyot in that whenever it falls out, you fast, it has to be exactly on that day. Even if that day is Shabbat. It doesn't fall on our calendar on Shabbat. You would fast Asara B'Teves on Shabbat. 1, 2, 3, whoa. And that doesn't happen. But it does happen on Friday. Trivia question for kids, like, you know, what fast would you fast if it came on Friday? What fast ever called on Friday? Not Yom Kippur, not Tisha B'Av. What is the only fast we fast on Fridays? By the way, this Friday is Asara B'Teves. that's why we're having the shiur today. Yes. Getting back to the point. This is why one line in our Zmirot Shabbos is incorrect. Because it says we're supposed to enjoy Shabbos. That's why fasting on it is usher with the exception of Yom Kippur. Alkein hitanot bo al pi nevona vasur levad miyom kippur avoni. I think the explanation, we'll have to get to the explanation of the explanation, but the explanation for this is very simple. If you look in the bottom of page 1, the psukim in Zechariah that describe the Taniyot talk about Tzom ha-revi'i, v'tzom ha-chamishi, v'tzom ha-shevi'i, v'tzom ha-asiri. Those numbers are describing what? The months. The fourth month has what fast? Nisan, Iyar, Sivan. Fifth month is what fast? Seventh month, this is talking about the Churban fasts, has Tzom Gedalia. And the tenth month has? Most fasts are a din in the month. Din in the month falls on Shabbos, do it the next day. Asar Bateves is a din in the day. How do you know? Atzem Ayom Hazeh. So whenever it falls, we have to fast the day. And I think the significance of this is, and by the way, in this way it's more chomer even than Tisha B'Av, it seems that there's some significance to it as it, and not just as an introduction to what's coming. The average person would assume, as we'll soon learn more, Asar Bateves is significant because it's the beginning of a process that led to the Churban. In which case, it should have so little significance in and of itself. But if it's more significant in and of itself than even Tisha B'Av, it shows you that the day itself is very significant. So now we've sharpened our question of what we want to try and determine, and now we want to try and determine, right? Okay, so what is Asar Bateves commemorating? The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, fourth source on page 2, in reference to the pasuk we just read in Zechariah that describes it as the fast of the 10th, the Gemara asks, what day in the month should we be fasting? Interesting conversation, considering the fact that all the other taniyot, we know exactly what day it is. Here we don't know the day, and yet the day becomes very important for that day. The Gemara quotes a braisa where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, there were four things Rabbi Akiva was Doresh, and I disagreed with him. Rabbi Akiva was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's Rebbe. One of them is which day in the month Asar Bateves is for. It says, Rabbi Akiva used to say that Soma Asiri is the 10th day, the day when the siege was laid on Yerushalayim. That day is described back in the Pesachim in Yecheskel on page 1 that we saw earlier, 10th day of the 10th month. Pasuk Bet, Yecheskel is told to write down the Etzem Ayom Hazeh, because Samach Melech Bavel Yerushalayim Be'etzem Ayom Hazeh. The reason Yecheskel needed to be told about it by Hashem is because Yecheskel was in Golus. No, he went with the first Golus to Bavel. So he's being told in Bavel about the laying of the siege to Yerushalayim on the Asar Bateves. This event is also reported to us in Melachim Bet, continuing on page 2, Perichov Hei, Pesukim Aleph and Bet, describe the beginning of the siege. This is what most people assume, because we observe it, of course, in Asar Bateves. The continuation of the Gemara says, Hashem Rechai disagrees, and he says the day to fast it is the 5th of Tevet, because that's when the people in Bavel heard about the Churban Beit Mikdash, the next year. Right? The first year, Asar Bateves began the Churban. It continued through the year until Tisha B'Av was the Churban. The next Asar Bateves, not Asar Bateves, Hey Bateves, the people in Bavel heard about the news. If you look in Yechezkel Perek Lamed Gimel Pasuk Chaf Aleph, it says in the 12th year, on the 5th of the 10th month, the escapees from the city came and informed about the Churban. Now, this is a shocking thing. It's one thing to commemorate the day when something happened. Why fast the day when people found out about it? That's a surprising thing. If you thought the day the siege was laid wasn't a big news, I would think that that for sure shouldn't be a day when you fast. Another interesting thing is that just like the fast begins with different days, there are other events and days added to it. In Megillat Ta'anit, which is a recording of different days marked different events in Bayit Sheni, it says that on the 8th day of Tevet, you're supposed to fast, because it's the day when the Greeks forced the translation of the Torah, and darkness came to the world for 3 days. It says on the 9th day, you're supposed to fast, but we weren't told why. Tisha B'Av lo katzu rabotinu al mahi. About or on?
About.
About. Okay.
Tomorrow.
And the 10th day talks about the siege. Shulchan Aruch, by the way, mentions both of these days, and I don't want to steal Shemin's thunder, but in Slichos, we say on Asar Bateves, we talk about the 3 tzarot that happened in this period, and the one identified on the 9th day is the death of Ezra HaSofer. Some say it was Ezra and Nehemiah. Again, you know, that's the big secret we were hiding. You know, Chassidim have yahrzeits when they have a Kiddush, and they don't say Tachnun for every Rebbe, which comes out more or less every day. When I was a kid, I used to daven in a minion factory, Chassidish minion factory. You know, they have those things, you have a little thing you slip in for Saint Talamata or Mashivaruch, they had a little thing for Tachnun. Every once in a while, it said Tachnun, if not, you didn't say Tachnun. Who was it? The Rebbe died. Which Rebbe? I don't know. So think of the reverse. If we're going to fast on everybody's yahrzeit, Ezra and Nehemiah, I don't mean to belittle them in any way. But when Avram's yahrzeit, Yitzchak, Yan, Giv, Moshe, Aaron, David, Shloima, each one of the Shvatim, you know, we would never eat. Which, you know, might be good for me. But, you know, I don't know, like, what's the deal? Why would we fast? What's so special about that? And I think that also is the beginning of the explanation as to why today there's been an added significance attributed to Asar Bateves. Anyone knows what it is? What? No. That wasn't added today. But the thing that happened was this. The Rabbanut HaRashit, The State of Israel, when it was founded, for those who don't know, we found the State of Israel. There was a big discussion about when and how should we commemorate the Holocaust. So there were secular Israelis who wanted to add a new date to the calendar. They did. Eventually they added a day, Yom HaShoah, why it was chosen then and what the meaning of it is. We'll talk about when we get closer to Yom HaShoah. But the Rabbanut HaRashid felt that just like other bad things that had happened in the past and had been connected to other Taniyot, the Shoah should be commemorated on one of the Taniyot. And interestingly, the one they chose was Sarbat Tevet. The obvious question is, why? See, we are going to hopefully get to an explanation as to where this all begins, why it turns into all these different days, and what it's supposed to mean to us today. That's the goal this year. Elon, you get the goal this year? Should we start? Okay, good. So let's start with the event that happened first historically, the siege. This is, of course, how we paskin, right? We do it on a Sarah B'Teves. And the Rambam, when he's explaining in the next halacha of the different days, the second line, he says, Sarah B'Teves, Shebo Samach Melech Bavel Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha Al Yerushalayim Veheviah B'Matzor. What's a Matzor? The Rambam adds another word, Uvimatzok. What is Matzok? Matzok means destruction and suffering. Matzok is what happens when there is a matzor. If you look in the Pesukim in Yecheskel, which describe it, it even mentions this as the goal of the matzor. Yecheskel, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud Zayin, talks about the building of a siege, Lehachrit Nefeshot. The purpose of a siege is to cause the people on the inside to suffer and die, instead of having to war with them. Yecheskel, Perek Chav Aleph, Pesukim Chavchet through, Chav Gimel through Chavchet, describe how Melech Bavel, when he got to the area, was trying to decide which city to attack first with a siege, Rabat Amon or Yerushalayim. He did a lottery, kind of, and it turned down Yerushalayim, which was a way of seeing that God wanted Yerushalayim to be destroyed. And when he talks about the way it came out, he said, Pasuk of Zion, the Kesem fell in Yerushalayim, Asum Karim Liftoach Pe Beretzach, to begin the process of systematic murder of the people on the inside. And this explains the signs that God used for describing the siege to Yechezkel. There are two. The first is in Perichov Dalet. Yechezkel was told that Yerushalayim is going to be like a pot. It's a continuation of the psukim we saw before. Like a pot that has food inside, that doesn't just cook the food, but totally burns and destroys the food. The nimshal is Yerushalayim is the pot. And who's getting burned? The people inside who can't escape during the siege. In Yechezkel Perik Dalet, it also talks about the day of the siege. And it talks about the terrible famine that's going to set in because of that. Let's focus particularly on Pesukim Tet Zayin and Yud Zayin on the end, on the top of page 4. Vayomer Elai, Hashem said to Yechezkel, Ben Adam, Hineni Shover Matei Lechem B'Yerushalayim. I'm breaking the staff, the bread staff. V'yachlu Lechem B'Mishkal. They're going to have to ration out the food. U'v'de'aga, U'mayim B'Misura V'Shimamon Yishtu. L'man Yachzeru Lechem U'mayim V'Nashamu Ish V'Yachiv V'Nemakuvah V'Onam. They're going to rot in their sins. The term that the Rambam uses, b'matzor u'v'matzok, is a term that he didn't make up himself. It comes from the Tochacha and Sefer Dvarim, Parshat Ki Tavo, and I think the usage of the term helps us connect between the events that happened at the time of the Churban on Asar B'Tevet and the Tochacha that the Rambam saw as a basis for already predicting these events. Continuing on page 4, it talks about how a goy is going to come from far away, and he's going to pressure you inside your walls and lay siege until it falls down. And what's going to happen inside the walls? It describes in Pesukim Nun Gimel, Nun Dalid, and Nun Zayin about how people are going to be so desperate they're going to eat the flesh of their own children. And the way it's described, the same chorus phrase, B'matzor uv'matzok, they are the two words, Asher yatzik l'cho ha'ivecho. The developing chiddush here is that after being mentioned in general in Pasuk Nun Gimel, Nun Dalet and Nun Hei speak about the men doing it, and Nun Vav and Nun Zayin speak about how even the fine, sensitive women are going to eat their own children out of desperation of how far people sink in these circumstances. Another thing from the Tochacha that's realized through the laying of the siege is the Hester Panim. If we look in Dvarim Perek Lamed Aleph, Hashem talks about how when we're suffering, God will be so angry that He'll ignore us. Pasuk Yud Zayin, V'chara Pivo Bayomahu, V'azavtim V'histarti Fanai Mehem. This is seen as Chazal as also being part of what was signified by the siege. Let's go back to the bottom of page 3 again. Yecheskel Perek Dalet. He's told by Hashem to take a brick and engrave the city of Yerushalayim on it, and then build walls of dirt around it to represent the siege. And then he's told Pasuk Gimel, take an iron pan and put it as an iron wall between you, Yecheskel, and the city. What is that meant to signify? The Gemara in Brachot, continuing on page 4, Lamed Bet Amed Bet says, from the day the Beit Mikdash was destroyed, there's been an iron wall separating between the Jews and Avihim Shebashamayim. And what Pasuk is quoted? The Pasuk we just read from Yecheskel. And so if we want to be more exact, it's not exactly just from the day of the Churban, it's already with the laying of the siege when that process of separation begins. And there's a third thing which the siege is presented as being the beginning of. Let's read again, top of page 4, Perek Dalid, Pasuk Yud Gimel Yecheskel says, Vayomer Hashem, Kacha yochlu v'nei Yisrael et lachmam tamei bagoyim asher adichem sham. Already from the laying of the siege, God speaks about the gullet that's around the corner. That phrase, bagoyim asher adichem sham, is also taken from the Tochacha, towards the bottom of the page, Dvarim Perek Lamed Pasuk Aleph. Later on, bottom of page 4, Yecheskel talks about the destruction that's going to take place. A third of the people are going to go by the sword, and a third of them are going to be destroyed in fire, and a third will be spread around the world. Taken from the other Tochacha, bottom of page 4, Vayikra Perek Vav, Ve'etchem ezarev agoyim, Ve'arikot yacharem chared, Ve'etar etchem shmama, Ve'erchem yu chorba, etc. Or in other words, the galut already symbolizes what's coming. The laying of the siege is the beginning of the galus. And it all connects because the siege is a terribly destructive, painful event. But also, what a siege is you're cut off from the world. And on a deeper level, what it was meant to signify is you're cut off from God. God is no longer interested in you. The galut is a natural result of that. Technically, you may still be in Israel, but you're already separated from God. And the beginning, the process of the galut has already begun. And I think this is the explanation for the Medrash in the bottom of page 4, which says, God did the Jewish people a favor. What favor is that? They deserved to be taken into galus already on Asara B'Tevet. They quote the pasuk we read before. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu did them a favor. He didn't want them to go in the winter. There are storms coming. Could you imagine if we were going to galus during the winter, how many people would have died just on the way? He waited for the summertime to be the time when they would actually have to evacuate the city. Or in other words, the point I'm taking out of the Medrash is, the time when they were roy to go in the galut, the separation began already on a Thursday. And I think that this connection between the laying of the siege as the beginning of the galut can help us understand the opinion of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Why is it so significant to commemorate the day when they hear about it in galut? Because that is the significance of these events in the first place. The galut is the result of these events. And I think it explains why Chazal connected to it other events that signified the low points of the Jewish people in galut. First of all, the control of other nations, which manipulates the Torah, which causes the false translation of the Torah by the Greeks. Other nations are taking control of us from the time of the laying of the siege in Bayit Rishon. And forward, the Jews lose their independence. Ezra and Nehemiah, these leaders during this period of Jewish struggle for independence to get out of the galus. And obviously, the stuff we were just speaking about can help us understand very well how Asara B'Tevet is the backdrop of commemoration of the Holocaust. The Holocaust is not just the story of the death and loss of Jewish people. The Holocaust is also the story of the terrible suffering and demonization and ruthless extermination of the Jewish people. The Pesukim we were reading a few minutes ago about siege and ghettos and people having to eat their own children, the desperation that's part of that, and the pure destruction, they happened at the time of the Churban, but they happened, and for sure in our mind, most vividly recently, as a reminder of the fact that the problems we need to fix haven't yet been corrected. The sense of being separated from God is the root of it. Right, it's something that was felt acutely at that time. if galut begins on Asar B'Tevet, and if terrible suffering is connected to the siege, then Asar B'Tevet is a very appropriate day to commemorate the Holocaust. So where does all this leave us? Where I think it should leave us is we need to be able to reflect for ourselves on where we can see the notion of siege in our own lives. If you take a look on page 5, I put together a couple of articles here which actually use that word about Israel and the Jewish people being under siege. Anyone who reads the news can get a real sense of the way the world, other nations relate to the Jewish people. First of all, the countries right around us, but also the world as a whole. This loneliness and this pressure on Israel and the Jewish people is something that I think we're supposed to associate with the first time this is presented to us and commemorated. What are we meant to take out of all this? Well, people can look at it at face value. The Babylonians have laid siege to Yerushalayim. We can't get out and get food. We can't. And there's truth to that. But as we saw in Yechezkel, the significance, the deeper message of what the siege symbolizes is that God is cutting you off from Him. And that really is why all those other things technically, practically happen. Why does God cut Himself off from us? Why does God put distance into the relationship? The real answer is that God doesn't put anything into the relationship. He just responds to the way we see the relationship. The closer we are to God, the closer He is to us. The further we are, the further He is. And the only way we can see the distance is by some physical barrier being erected. Well, that's what will happen. And that's what happens today too. Jews thought when they return to Israel, it'll solve the problem of the Jewish people. Just ask Herzl. Jews have been frustrated for 100 years because it's not working. Beating the Arabs into submission doesn't work. Giving everything to the Arabs doesn't work, except if we give them our neck and a shechita knife. So what should we do to solve the Jewish problem? And I think the answer is we have to understand what the siege really signifies. Just to bring this home a little bit more, if you take a look at page 6, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Ches that we were talking about before, it talks about the Taniyot. And the pasuk that we were reading before, it talks about how one day the Taniyot will be days of celebration. The Gemara asks when that day will be. And the Gemara says the day will be when there'll be Shalom. When there'll be Shalom, there won't be Taniyot anymore. The Rishonim debate, and I think there's basis for both opinions in the Gemara, what Shalom here means. For Rashi, for example, Sheyesh Shalom, second source, page 6, says, She'ein yad ha-goyim tkeif al Yisrael. When the goyim don't control the Jewish people. Rambam seems to understand that a similar way, because the Rambam says in Hilchot Taniyot that the Tzomot will be batel in Yemos HaMashiach. In Hilchot Teshuvah, the Rambam describes Yemos HaMashiach, the only difference in the world will be that the Jews will have independence. The Rashba has a different formulation of this. Shalom is when the Jews return to their land. That's one could talk about. We return to the land, we have independence, we don't have independence, there is suffering, we can talk about whether today is a day, time of Shalom or not. But if you look at Rabbeinu Hanan, the second source in the bottom of page 6, he describes Shalom differently. Shalom is when the Beit Mikdash is rebuilt. So the question is, when do the Taniyot end has a lot to do with what they're commemorating in the first place. Are the Taniyot commemorating Jewish suffering, in which case they cease and turn into happy days when we have peace? Or do they commemorate the Churban HaBayit, in which case they cease when the Beit Mikdash is rebuilt? If you look back at Rashi, second source on page 6, the Rashi, the first one here, when he's talking about when the Taniyot cease, he talks about Beit Mikdash or not. And that's strange, because the second Rashi, which we began with, talks about Jewish independence. The Ritva talks about, bottom of page 6, he talks about them together. And I think even though there is a real debate about what the root is, in the end there's no nafkamina and no real debate, because the two are linked. And I want to explain along the lines I was saying before. You know, on Tisha B'Av everyone sits on the floor. What are we commemorating on Tisha B'Av? Is it Churban HaBayit or suffering of the Jewish people? And both themes are on the table. I think the explanation is the following. If God gave us peace. People would think, everything's great. We've arrived. If all we had was the Churban HaBayit without any suffering or pressure or difficulties, we would think everything is great. Why do we have all the suffering and difficulties? For us to realize everything is not great. God will not allow the Jewish people to rest in peace until the relationship between them and Him is repaired. I have a theory, which I think is a really sad theory, but I think it's true, so, you know. The Jewish people will not achieve peace until they achieve peace. And shalom doesn't just mean peace, it means the rebuilding of the Beit Mikdash. I'm not saying we shouldn't try our best to find as much peace as possible. I'm not against the peace process, assuming there's one that was real and not, you know, the raping of the state of Israel. But we should achieve and reach for peace. We should do the best we can. I don't say that sarcastically. But I believe the Jewish people will not be at peace with the world until they're at peace with God. That's the whole root of it. That's why all the suffering has happened, because of the Churban HaBayit. Not because the stones were knocked down, but because of what the Churban HaBayit, beginning with the siege, signifies. The rupture, the dysfunctionality of our relationship with God. And that's, I think, what we need to think about, using the siege imagery that is the topic of the day on Asarah B'Teveh. There is no better place in the world, there is no other appropriate place in the world in which to observe and reflect properly on Asarah B'Teveh. I'm not saying you shouldn't fast Asarah B'Teveh in Tinek. You definitely should. But there's nothing like fasting it in Yerushalayim. And part of your reflection should be going to the walls of Yerushalayim. And that's why on Friday we have scheduled to go to the walls. But it's not just, ooh, let's walk along the walls. Isn't it cool? This is where it happened. Let's make a National Geographic video. Which I'm not against National Geographic videos. But the point is to reflect on and appreciate the greater meaning of what this is about. And if we go back to the Rambam that we began with, to think about the ma'asim that we continue of our ancestors that cause us to suffer in similar ways to the way they suffered. And to a certain extent, it's even worse today. Because our ancestors understood that they suffered because they're in Galus, they don't have an army, they're weak at the hands of the Germans and the Spanish and everyone else. It's disappointing today because the Jews thought we're going to return to Israel, we'll rebuild our own country, everyone will leave us alone and we'll live happily ever after. I don't think so. And hopefully, sooner rather than later, Jews will get the message. Maybe it'll take 15,000 other attempts to try and be normal like every other nation. Eventually people will look in the mirror and say, we're not normal. And realize what they need to fix in order to fix things. We should do the best we can to fix whatever we can for ourselves as quickly as possible. And help move the Jewish people as many steps forward towards fixing the bigger picture. Emir Tz Hashem, Afternoon Seder, 6:20, Q&A, save your questions.